You are listening to the oldest grace-based web presence on the internet, www.gospelrevolution.com, deconstructing religion and barbecuing the holy cows of Christianity right here in front of your very eyes.
To build an empire, I can't go back behind the barbed wire. Can't go back to a dampened fire now. I can't go back to boring meetings. I can't go back to pop chart singing. Can't go back, we're off the venture now.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you did not know you'd forgotten.
I can't go back to manipulation. I can't go back to intimidation. I can't go back to dehydration now. I can't go back to a dried up vine. I can't go back to no playtime. I can't go back, we've drunk the new one now.
So find yourself a spot in the shade while we wait for another heap and helping of the consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel in the religion-free zone and rarefied air of truth.
Go back to hierarchy. I can't go back to those in crowd parties. Can't go back to that malarkey now. I can't go back to dead religion. I can't go back to being driven. I can't go back, we've tasted heaven now. We just had enough and got on this bus.
And after that brand new intro, thanks to Godfrey Bertil. Go check him out. Here to read us the lesson for Powercast number 19-1213 is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, none other than that luminary of love, Michael Williams.
Good evening, Donald Bartlett.
How are you, mate?
I'm doing very well. Things are going well. Folks in the pledge drive are, you know what, our most response so far has been from people hearing you and I. And
Oh, really? Yeah,
that's really a change up. You know, we've got several people respond on Facebook to their contributions, and we really do appreciate that. I promise I'm going to be calling you. And some of you don't think that just because you contributed through PayPal that you're going to avoid a call from me. I may get around to it anyway.
Yeah, you don't think you're getting away with anything.
Exactly.
That's unusual. So you wanted to open the show with a money grab?
Yeah, well, it's a money appreciation thing. You know,
appreciation.
Yeah, we want to thank you very much for what you've done.
What an excellent way of putting it. I was wondering how you were going to do it. Were you going to plant a $1,000 seed? I'm talking to you.
Yeah,
to me.
No, because I don't believe in seed, that money is seed. So you're going to have to come up with a new crowbar or a shovel or something, because that one don't work with me. Money ain't seed.
I don't know. I like Mike Murdoch. I think that he's really got it down pat. And you know, if he says it, you must get it, surely. It's a seed.
Oh, you know, this is the second generation of this doctrine. I think Oral Roberts was the first to begin to really push this. I'm sure he wasn't the first to think about it, but he definitely was the one who turned money into seed. And boy, we would love for anybody to show us where that is true. Seed is seed. Money is not seed. All the tithing had to do with that which was born of seed.
Don't listen to him, people. just plant your seed here. We want your seed here. Hey, if you're wondering what we're talking about, keep tuned to the end of the show, and I'll play you a little extract by a couple of Aussie blokes. And I think we might have done it before, but it's just too funny to leave out. So, Mike, what's been happening, mate? You and I had a wonderful conversation just a couple of days ago from your new spaceship.
Well, you know, and since then, I've had a couple of other spaceship experiences. I'm not really sure which way we're going to go today. The one you and I spoke about was very interesting. Actually, to kind of throw you for a loop here, I woke up this morning, my mind was going a couple of different directions, probably because I was thinking about the show and what to do.
And me.
Yes, of course. And I was just beginning to realize how that the Word of Faith movement and just some of the involvements of my life in pursuit of works and performance-based, behavior modification-based belief systems. And when we use the term beliefs, and those guys were talking about the mythology type of belief, because that's all it is. If you are believing God the way the Word of Faith taught you to believe God, you are in mysticism. That's all there is to them. You're in paganism.
Well, the beautiful thing about mysticism is you can be mystical. You don't yeah. have to have any fact-based logic, really, do you?
Yeah, and that is for sure. And, you know, the interesting thing with mysticism is for every religion, there is at least one mystic.
Is that because in any strain of thought or belief or pattern, someone always goes to the extreme? Is that why?
Well, it's what we actually found out is that the mystics of each and every religion are those who doubt that the religion that says do this, get that, change your behavior is actually true. So they really are the ones who kind of are the, sometimes when I use the word mysticism, I realize that it's kind of a misnomer because a lot of these people were those who are helping those in Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, whatever they are, a mystic, their religion gets rid of them. They don't get rid of their religion. The mystics were those who saw that the performance-based religion just was not, didn't work, you know?
And it is performance-based. I mean, if you can believe whatever you want, but if you don't do whatever we want.
Yeah. So the mystics kind of took the sting out of each of these harsh religions, and including Christianity's. But they never let go of their religion. They were a Hindu mystic or a Buddhist mystic or I don't know of anybody out there. It was just a mystic's mystic. So maybe so. But
how about a pledge drive mystic? Can we have a couple of them?
We need some for sure. So these guys can be folks that have caused people to stop and pause and think just a little bit. But when we're talking about the term belief, we're talking about using it for something else other than it's given, declared, even by James Strong's definition, which means to simply give credit to. And if in the biblical belief, then if I'm going to believe in somebody, I'm giving them credit. So as we've gone through in Ephesians. But I started thinking about how these groups spring up almost like mystics come up like a pimple on the butt of a religion, you know, and that's what religion really considers. Each religion considers their mystics. It's like a pimple on their butt, you know.
Oh, I really needed that picture, which now I can't get rid of. I really needed that, mate.
So now the mystic, you just can't get rid of him, though. He's your mystic. He's part of your group. Doesn't make any difference whether you like him or not.
Deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes. You are listening to
Gospel Revolution.
Don, you know, the Word of Faith movement drove headlong into the results-based behavior modification beliefs. And when we say beliefs, we're talking about the kind of beliefs that we've finally dissected and cut away the tumor And honestly, the cancer of belief away from what belief actually means. There's a lot to be considered about our former understanding of belief. We did not redefine the word belief. We accepted the definition of the word belief, and it means to give credit. It doesn't mean all that we've ever done.
But don't you suppose for one moment that people won't imagine that we invented this ourselves?
You know, this is this is one of those. This is one of those. We looked to the definition in the Greek, and we found that this is the root word. It means to credit. And specifically, you know, I've learned out of Strong's. Don has another Greek dictionary, and Strong's, the entire word of faith movement depends on Strong's.
And of course, we're talking about James Strong's Bible Dictionary.
Yeah, exhaustive.
Oh, exhaustive. Yes. That's right. Yes. So heavy. Yeah.
And once you do that, the teachings on belief become simple. They really are. It has simplified. You don't have to put right hand on blue, left leg on red in the twister game of trying to come up with a doctrine. You just have to just accept what we read. My heart has always been to find what's real. I've wanted what is real more than anything else. If I told you some of the prayers I've prayed over my lifetime, there are some lifetime prayers that I have prayed. I remember wanting truth. I'm not unlike most all of our listeners out there that I know, and I know, of course, Don, that has been your main drive of life. It's just to really, I just want to know the truth. I don't care what it is. And I think that's something we all have in common, is that we didn't care what it was. We just wanted the truth. You had made a comment kind of off the air just a moment ago about politics and how far it's gone. And people have got to where they don't want the truth. They want to validate their side, their party.
Yeah, we call that confirmation bias. And you know, this week I posted in Facebook, it's one of the biggest responses I've ever had, and that was, the Bible may be inerrant, but your interpretation of it probably isn't. Well, dang. I don't know. I seem to have gotten to a place where I just drop these little things and people just go, totally crazy. You know, you'd think I was attacking apple pie. It's just funny. Oh, I tell you, it's very entertaining, and it keeps me busy. And in response to one person's antipathy, I simply wrote, look, if the Bible is to be trusted in the least, then there should be an overarching from beginning to end story that is credible. And that is what we in the Gospel Revolution have long said, you in particular, that the story is everything. Now, yeah. And I'm sure people think that we mean a fairy tale, but it's not that, is it?
No, we're talking about the story of, because that's what gospel means. It means good news. It means good story. Story is something that has already happened. You don't read Hansel and Gretel. You don't read Shakespeare to find out what's going to happen. You read it to get the story out of it. My first extreme, which many people would call what we're doing now and what I've done over these last few years is extreme, and it is. I don't deny that at all. But extreme compared to what is what we need to do.
There you go.
But I started out in, I went to the Baptist church, and the Baptist church, I heard all these verses, but they weren't doing anything about them. They were talking about winning the lost, but unless you came to their church, walked down their aisle, you were not going to get won. They weren't doing any of the things, pray without ceasing, the go tell it on the mountain. My goodness, they just weren't doing it. We got together. Why do people wind up in works-based behavioral modification belief systems? Because they're desperate. That's why. We've swallowed the shame-based part of it, There's a difference between guilt and shame. And guilt is feeling bad for what you do, and shame is feeling bad about who you are. Shame and guilt are really like the cancer around the gospel. It keeps the gospel from having any power whatsoever. It's like the hypothalamus or the pituitary gland. You want to mess up your whole body, get a cancer growing around one of those. And while it's designed to really cause the whole body to function, if it becomes encased in a cancer and a growth, it's not going to be able to perform. In fact, you're going to die. And I really do see the teachings of shame and guilt on people's lives, like the gospel being that central gland, the entire brain, if you will, of the distribution of the power of God to the body of Christ. Man, I tell you, you're going to wind up crippled. You're going to wind up incapable of speaking and so many things if you don't get out of that. So we get enough of the religion to learn what guilt and shame are. We feel guilty about what we do. We feel ashamed of who we are. And then they give us the wrong pill to remedy that. You walk up, you confess, you promise never to do it again.
Well, it's a difference between if you and you are. What I mean by that is the message that goes out from pulpits every Sunday morning in the Christian universe is, if you really love God, you'll do this. If you are really born again, you'll do this. If you want to see heaven, you'll do this. Mm-hmm. If you want to miss out on hell, you'll do this. Where what the gospel says is, you are holy.
Yes.
You are righteous. You are perfect.
The only answer to shame.
The
only answer to shame is the gospel, because otherwise you have no view of who you really are.
How can you? Yeah.
No, there's just no possibility outside of the gospel that you are righteous, you are holy, you are perfect. You're without fault, you're without blame.
Well, it's like being on a ship in the huge ocean surrounded by sea. You've got the map in front of you, but you just don't know where you are on that map.
Oh, for sure. So we reach out to grasp for something that is outside the box, you know. And so my first reach out was to the Children of God, and I joined that group from sitting on the beach in Clearwater, Florida. And they walked up and sat down on my beach towel and started sharing Christ with me. It was the first time anybody had ever done that, except in Sunday school at the age of 5. I'd never seen or heard of somebody going out and sharing the gospel. That blew me away that they did that.
Yeah, but it read nice. It made nice reading. But have you ever seen it?
I had never seen it. So they kind of won me over by the fact they were willing to do what the Baptist said you have to do, but never did it at all. And at least the Baptist church I went to in South Harriman, Tennessee. And then they invited me over for a Bible study. I mean, this is the hippie movement. This was the early 70s, folks.
And next thing you knew, you were sharing all your underwear and your overwear with each other.
I didn't even have a pair of underwear that I called my own. Everything went into the big wash day, and whatever came out, if the underwear you liked came out of the wash and somebody else didn't get them first.
So did you ever find yourself wearing girls' panties or anything?
No, the girls' things had to be in the girls' things, and the boys' things had to be in the boys' things.
Oh, okay.
But the Children of God, they, that's how these religions grab you, is that they take a part of something that's probably and most assuredly out of context, and then say, we are the only ones doing this. And that's how they got me. They said, we are the only ones we are practicing the early church. We are the extension. We are the genetic descendants of the early church, because look at all these buildings. Look at all, are they selling everything that they have and distributing it to every man that, as he, needs?
Are they sharing underwear?
They certainly were not. And, goodness, it was a self-righteous high. I can tell you, it did bring me out of depression because it was a self-righteous high.
But it was logical. What you're saying made sense.
It made sense because we found it in the Bible, you know, and that's what we were taught. Mm. Find a verse and stand on it. Just ignore the rest of them.
Yeah.
So that's what brought me into any true attempts at being applied to the Bible. And of course, I left that when I started seeing the error of it, when we were being told that stealing was okay. I've told that story before, and I'm not going to retell it here today, that there's a difference between spoiling Egypt and robbing from a brother or stealing from a brother. And one was stealing and the other one wasn't. And it's my mama taught me better than this. I got to get out of here.
Oh, wow. Isn't it amazing? We humans, we can rationalize away anything as long as we kind of convince ourselves it's fair game.
So I went from that to then, of course, needing the demons cast out of me, and the man connected to that, then he was actually casting out devils. And their emphasis was, and you shall cast out devils. And we didn't cast out devils in the children of God. We had gone with Don's running line here. We had to try to find our own underwear every day. But we never cast out a devil. I mean, we walked the streets, 8 hours. We considered it our job. We walked every day, 8 hours a day, and we shared Jesus 8 hours every day, minimum.
At least the Mormons get bicycles.
Yeah, and a nice shirt and tie, too. We've got on somebody else's underwear.
And a badge that says elder. Don't forget the badge.
Yes, so we had no elder badges.
If you did, you'd have had to just change them every day with your underwear. I mean, you'd have been a different elder every day.
A different elder. So then the Word of Faith movement came along after my departure from the children of God. And man, was I warned about all of the catastrophic things that would happen to me if I left. I literally had to escape from the children of God. I could write an entire book on escaping from the children of God. If you have Netflix and you want to see some about the children of God, all you have to do is type that in. It's either on Amazon or the Netflix, and just type in Children of God. They've done one or two documentaries on them. And wow. I can tell you there's a lot of that's in the documentary that I experienced, and there's a lot that I did not. And, of course, it is presented in a totally negative way. And I'm not trying to justify the group at all. I know beyond that for sure. But my goodness, there was some good experiences there, and family atmosphere, you know, things that just felt just tremendous as far as family was concerned. But then, of course, you leave that, and then the next thing you know, you're still struggling trying to find an answer. And then I wound up headlong after a deliverance session in the Word of Faith movement, and their emphasis on the works and behavior modification was, number one, to get the devils cast out of you. And number two was this belief system of seed faith.
I often wonder how they get to name the devils, you see. You got to call the devil out by name. I mean, a big old name in the devil universe is, of course, Jezebel. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Leviathan. I mean, where on earth are these things in the Bible? They're just...
we didn't get that technical with it.
Nah, just give them a name and cast them out. Yeah.
We all liked Baskin-Robbins ice cream. So we you know, when we all got a craving for Baskin-Robbins all at the same time, we called it a Baskin-Robbins demon, you know.
Oh, Lord.
Or B&R. B&R demon has got on me. And some of it facetiously, but we really did name demons. So we had to come up with names, because if you're going to order them out, you got to know their name. So blah, blah, blah.
I remember
the day that I stood up in church, and I will repeat this until the day I do die. And that's when I stood up and I screamed out loud, "It don't work."
Dang, I bet there was just a second's silence.
Well, it was look like throwing cold water on folks, you know. And then finally, as they begin to come to their senses and shake their head, one looked at the other one and said, "It don't work." The other one, it don't work. And the next thing I had the whole congregation singing, it don't work. But what they didn't know, I wasn't just talking about the Word of Faith movement. I was talking about my entire pursuit of belief of Christianity, all the way back to selling everything that I had and parting everything to every man as each man had need. I'd done all that, witnessing 8 hours a day, praying 3 hours a day in tongues.
You get to a point where you realize the emperor has no clothes.
Mm-hmm.
But until you get to that point, it's like you just don't get it.
No, you don't. You've got to, somebody can stand back and tell you, this works, and if you do this, that happens, until you start doing the experiments yourself. And, of course, the first thing you're told is the reason your experiment didn't work is because you didn't do it right.
Yep.
There's something wrong with you. You did something. You got sin in your life. The list begins to go on and on.
You don't have enough faith.
This organized mental illness, taught organized mental illness.
This organized, you knew I was going to ask you to say that again, didn't you?
And it's instructed. This is how you become mentally ill. Of course, that's not what we put on the end of that. And all of this attachment to something that might happen in the future, altering your future through spiritual deeds, giving, whatever it is, behavior modification-based belief systems. So now here we are in a gospel revolution, and my life has been filled with extremes in these things because if I became convinced of something, I did it with all my heart.
Now I want to revisit a private conversation you and I had the other day.
Sure.
And in that, we both agreed that there is a saying in Christianity, and it's in the Bible, about a peace which passes understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And we both agreed that we were enjoying a peace that passed understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it passes understanding in this way. You can't bloody explain it. All you know is you got it. Now, I know that every Christian I ever knew, particularly in the Word of Faith movement, but also in other churches as well, in the Brethren and in the Baptists and in the Anglican Church, of which I attended all of those at different times, they would all say, I'm filled with love and I'm full of that peace which passes understanding. I wasn't, and I doubt they are too, but now I can honestly say, as you and I said the other day in that conversation, we have it. And when we tried to explain how we got there,
mm-hmm.
the nearest place we could come to was to say, well, it happened when we realized that sin was no more, that I could not sin, that I was born holy, righteous, and perfect. That is, my God, I would not swap what I have now for what I had then. I would not swap it if you told me I was going to die tomorrow. I forget it. I don't want that crap anymore. It's just, this piece is, it's something else, isn't it, mate?
It really is. And getting rid of the part of that, the revelation and understanding of that sin's been done away with, righteousness has been imputed. You know, you don't have to get super, super smart to get this. If you stay with the three subjects, the Holy Ghost has been assigned the task to reveal to every human being that comes to this planet sin, righteousness, and judgment.
And it was Jesus who said that.
And it's Jesus that passed along that assignment and the information of the teaching. He said he's going to be teaching you about me. Number one is about Jesus. What about Jesus? What about Jesus about sin? What about Jesus about righteousness? What about Jesus about judgment? And no matter what he taught you about Jesus about sin, Jesus about righteousness, and Jesus about judgment, he's called him the Comforter, that these things were going to comfort you.
Oh, wow.
And you don't ever have to leave that arena. I can tell you, I don't think there's a thing that I've taught in the last 20 years that leaves the arena of sin, righteousness, or judgment. It's all there. and through a totally different lens than that which Christianity teaches. Christianity creates a cancer around the gospel, if you will. And all we've been doing is trying to get the cancer away from the gospel. It is the same as looking at a like a pituitary or thalamus or the brain itself. It knows how to function on its own. You just, if you get a cancer on it, it's going to malfunction. It's not going to do what it is supposed to do.
Well, one of the things about a cancer is it has little roots, and it sends the roots out until it constricts and totally surrounds the organ.
It absolutely sucks the life out of it to feed itself. It is an organism of its own. Mm. You know, we don't have to do surgery on you to get this out. The gospel does the surgery itself. You need to hear it, though.
Gospel revolution.
Creation replicates itself. Creation extends creation. And we have some things going on now in the medical profession, I'd have to say also technology.
And we're just two old men, and the closer to death we get, the more interested in the medical things arena we are.
So all of the sciences, genome therapy, goodness gracious, the mapping of the human genome, altering the human genome. I was thinking about this. One of the things that I'd heard, this has been probably 5 years ago, what we've done with that since, I don't know. I think it probably got caught up in FDA and rules and regulations, and they're trying to pass it through a system, and basically you're getting old treatment for cancer. This just so captured my imagination. I was watching this documentary. I wish I could tell you which one it was, but it was one of those modern Marvel type things, you know, and they cover technology and building bridges and everything that is a subject where that science is moving forward. And they got to one on gene technology. Like I said, it's been at minimum of 5 years ago that I watched this. And they were showing from a major hospital in the Northeast that studies nothing but cancer, treats nothing but cancer. And on their board, they have a person who represents each and every discipline of health to approaching the cure of cancer. And they do include people that are more of the holistic and natural cure. They're willing to try everything, but they're testing it. They put it all to the test. The one gentleman who was in charge of the genetics part of research into cancer and the cure of cancer spoke up in board meeting. I think these folks get together about once a week and compare notes, bring their, you know, patient data in and review it, what treatments have worked, what have not done, because the people don't go here unless conventional treatment has not worked. So this one gentleman speaks up. It's a shame that he's done so much, and I can't tell you his name. But he spoke up and he said, hey, he says, you know, guys, I think I know how to cure a neuroblastoma, which is a brain cancer that is an inoperable and incurable.
Wow. So if you could cure that, you're really cooking with gas.
You've done something. But of course, that would also include clinical trials. But this research was set aside with, instead of trying things out on mice, they actually were allowed to try things out on humans who had no other options, who were out of options. The determination of end of their lives, there was no option for them anymore left. Just none. So they had they selected three of their blastoma victims who were dying. Family knew they were dying. They knew they were dying. I know how to cure cancer. So, of course, jaws drop, eyes roll, you know, they're just standing there, please pray tell again, you know. And he explained how that cancer remains intact because, and I did not know this about cancer, that cancer has a shield that keeps your own immune system from identifying it. The reason cancer cannot be cured by your immune system is because your immune system doesn't know it's there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, I never knew that about cancer. My whole family's died with cancer, but nobody ever told me that. It's like, shouldn't that be in the handbook, you know?
Yeah, really, something that basic.
Yeah, that's why they have to go in with chemo and radiation and all these external invasive chemicals and treatments, surgeries, because your own immune system has no clue something is wrong.
So stop teasing us. Tell us, what was his cure?
His cure was, first off, they needed the immune system to identify the tumor. He said the one thing that we know that immune system identifies is polio. And he said, if we take a strand of polio and we neuter it, we take out the male part of it. It cannot reproduce at all, but it's still, you know, if you neuter a human being, he's still a human being, but he just can't reproduce. Right.
Uh-huh.
So they said, we're going to send in polio into this virus. The polio will be injected directly into the virus. The immune system has no clue as to whether or not this virus has the ability to reproduce or not. It simply knows it's there and therefore triggers the response to attack.
So hold on, let me get this right. He was suggesting that he takes something the immune system can identify, mm-hmm. Somehow mates that up with a cancer that the immune system is incapable of identifying. Now this yes. makes the cancer identifiable as an enemy of the body.
It has still not identified the cancer, but it has identified the polio. And if the polio is inside the tumor, as it attacks the polio, the tumor would be destroyed. Now, folks, things are going on like crazy in wow. research right now. It's fantastic. So anyway, they chose three. They were free to do these experiments on live subjects out of option. They selected three, and they injected, of course, it's guesswork. They've never done this before. How much of the polio do we inject into this blastoma? And they injected the same amount in all three. And each and every time they went back in week after week, and it was over relatively short period of time, just a few months, way less than a year for sure. These tumors had not only shrank, they had disappeared.
Oh, my God.
They were gone.
Wow.
With no operations, nothing at all. And then, of course, their next attempt, and as humans tend to do, if a little worked, then a whole lot is going to do even better.
If some is good, more is better.
More is better. It doesn't make any difference whether you are a scientist or how smart you are. Humans always think more is better. And so uh-huh. they tried more on the next three. And the next three, they noticed that the scans were saying the tumors were growing. The tumors, the people died relatively quickly after the treatment. And up on autopsy, they saw that it was not the tumor that had grown, but that the inflammation from the from attacking the polio in a too aggressive way, the inflammation itself destroyed the brain.
Oh, boy.
So at that point, that's where FDA takes over and now is running test and process. Even though they have a cure for blastomas, you're probably not going to find it at your local hospital. because now it's now in the trial phase now to take it through its paces to see how much, where, when, why, what for, why does it work, what are the long-term effects, all of this stuff. So, you know, that took me to a weird place, Don, and as I can go to weird places.
Anyone who can wear somebody else's underwear, that weird place comment of yours is really an understatement. You do realize that, don't you?
It is indeed. Anyone who can share his underwear, too. So.
Oh, geez.
It took me to a very funny place, and that's when I called you. When I go to funny places, I called on. And I started thinking about the virgin birth, you know, and of which I am persuaded is real. It's part of the story, let me put it that way. And it is a part of the story. If you take it out, none of the story works. Because the issue is about the seed, and the story is about the about sin and its invasion, the cancer of sin, if you will, and its invasion into the planet through the first Adam. And then we needed a cure for the cancer of sin. So the I started thinking about how that they removed the male part of this strand of polio, if you will, which man himself was considered to be the problem. Man himself was the sin. So I started thinking about just strictly the physics of a virgin birth, which physics and virgin birth don't go together. I realize that. But now we're realizing through the ability to alter the human genome. Don, do you know that a child not only can have three parents now? And now that sounds pretty strange in and of itself. But and the way that that happens is if a child, if they find it, and this has been a discussion for many years, that if we were able to do it, now we are actually able to do it. But if you want a child that has blue eyes, you find a donor that everybody in their generations has blue eyes, and you take that part of the DNA, you inject it into whatever stage the fetus is in, which this is long before the fetus stage, and if you inject that in, if you want tall, you take a strand out of that DNA from another donor. And they've already done this where that there are children that have at least three parents, technically.
Wow.
Because they have the genetic material of three people. But the fact of it is, the technology is now there to where a child could have more than 900 parents.
Good grief.
Yeah. By selecting different parts of what you want. If you want a musician, you take that part of the genetic material from a family where that, if you want a singer, if you want to, you know, and this is where we are into that thing where, well, we can't play God.
Seems to be what we're doing.
Seems to be what we're already doing. And maybe it's by default because the fact is we are God in the earth.
So what you're saying is modern science is capable of making an Einstein with blue eyes, blonde hair, and is probably going to be about 6'1" and be a musical, have a musical component to it so that it could be a Beethoven and also a basketball star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just
good heavens.
Now that technology is upon us. This is not sci-fi.
You do know that I just described myself, right?
Well, I'm sitting here looking at you, of course. I know that. How could I accept by observation know that?
Oh, they didn't put in the anti-balding part. That's all. I don't know why.
Because they knew you look better without hair.
So what has this got to do with the virgin birth?
Well, if you think about just the physics of that, just think of the physics. If you took it out of a DNA strain, which, you know, God, surely people would think that if God created everything, that he knows what DNA is, and that he knew when he created DNA that DNA could be altered. So what if the origins of this DNA, the ability to alter our DNA, that the Creator simply with Christ coming to this earth, with his birth, that what he did is he took out the male component.
Joseph.
Yes, they took, he removed the male component, set it aside, Joseph, the man who was married to Mary, and he put in the genetic reality called God. So now, since Adam is the one who passed on sin, if the problem is sin, let's just take that gene out.
Oh, wow. My mind is just exploding a little bit. So let me get this right. So yeah. God, 2,000 years.
He's a geneticist.
Yeah, 2,000 years before we were able to do it. God, you're suggesting, put the God DNA in Jesus before he was born.
Yes, fully human, just like the polio virus was fully polio. But if you can remove the male part of it, you can put the male part of something else. I'm telling you, science itself is explaining the basic truths of creation in the gospel, and they don't even know it yet, I don't think.
You know, I'm just thinking of something, and I know that I'm going to get shot down with this, but greater things than this shall you do.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Well, that's a catch-all. We can use it wherever we want to, and if you don't like it, that's your problem.
There you go.
Because you use it wherever you want to.
There you go.
So we'll call a truce on that one.
But, mate, this is... if I'm understanding you correctly, we need a moment's silence or maybe several hours' silence just to absorb this thought.
Well, it is, goodness, I reel from it. I've gone through so many emotions from it. The fact that God in Christ. Now, what does that mean? That means that God, let's say DNA, God, how did Christ become God? He became God because the DNA of Adam was kept out and the DNA of God was put in.
So Jesus never really did become God. He was.
Yes,
from
exactly.
From the get-go. Okay.
Yeah, from the get-go. Now, he became the great high priest. There was things that he had to become through suffering, as Hebrews teaches us. He didn't come here as a great high priest, but he did become the great high priest, which is a wonderful, oh my gosh, I'm telling you, I'm wanting now to just stay on the air for the next 12 hours and let's go through all this stuff. But so we would have, I started thinking about it and I thought, you know what? What we are then is we are all GMOs. You know, we are genetically modified organisms, and we've been GMOs for 2,000 years. Man, my mind just went to the Milky Way and back.
Not happy with having blown our minds just a little bit. Now you want to take it the whole way. I can see that.
So here we are, you know, and I think, folks, I'm telling you, you know, how long have people known about the color spectrum, right?
Uh-huh.
Ever since the rainbow appeared after the flood of Noah, according to the book of Genesis, it would have been the first rainbow. There wouldn't have been a rainbow until after the flood. We all saw Roy G. Biv. Now, that's how I was taught to memorize the colors of the color spectrum and that's Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. And everybody could see that. I mean, you know, Noah's family saw Roy G. Biv when they stepped off the ark. Thousands of years later and throughout that thousands of years, everybody could see Roy G. Biv. But sometime in the last, just the last couple of hundreds of years, we realized that there was more to the color spectrum that we didn't know was there.
What more?
There's more color to the color spectrum than to Roy G. Biv. So we'd have to change the name of Roy G. Biv, and it would definitely start with a U and end with a UV instead of violet. You insert that then, and it's not that you're putting something there that wasn't there. Suddenly, you're able to see infrared through special means. You can see the other end. See, we missed the ends of the pot roast, if you will.
Okay.
All right. So we missed the ends of this because...
And the two ends are?
Are ultraviolet and infrared. All right. That nobody saw until we had the technology to be able to see it. Now, we have seen the human genome chain. Don, there's something in me, and now here I go into the world of the wonderful. I think that the human genome, the same as we went, but I am very hopeful that we're not going to go thousands of years before we see the full spectrum of the human genome. But I'm absolutely convinced the same as the spectrum of the rainbow was visible to the human eye, there is the ultraviolet and infrared. I think there is an ultra and an infra to, if you will, whatever that'll turn into in the human genome, to the human genome. There is an ultra to it. There is a part of it we can't see yet. Just the same as we could not see ultraviolet and infrared. This genome, this physical genome, there's a God part in there. It just is there. When they started studying the human brain, they finally had to conclude that there's a part of the human brain that they said was the God part, the unexplained part. I can't even remember now what that, what area that was. I heard about it again recently, and it sparked my imagination once more. But you see, we were genetically modified 2,000 years ago. Adam was removed from our genetic makeup. He's just not there anymore. He's disappeared. He is not our father anymore. We are not descendants of Adam at all. We are literally the descendants of Christ. And this genetic material, if you will, in spiritual sense, we are descendants of righteousness. Remember when we read that part in Ephesians about the sons of disobedience? The children of disobedience. And I made a bit of a to-do that this is not those who are disobedient. He's talking about the children of disobedience. And we're talking about the same thing. We are the children of righteousness. We are the children of holiness, which what makes us what? If we're the children of, we are it. We are holy. We are righteous. The same as those who were the children of disobedience. They were sinners. We are the children of obedience, and therefore we are righteous. We are holy. We are without fault. And it's not just our little group. So, Mike, what sets you now apart from all other groups? Because what we now understand to be truth is applicable to every human being on the planet. You don't have to belong to our group to have this. You've got it outside of our ability to control, to impart, to infuse, to manipulate, to control. You've got it. The bad seed is gone, folks.
Well, I want to I want to just mention an article that was first posted in SciTechDaily.com, and it reads as follows: Scientists discover structure of mysterious protein central to the functioning of DNA. What was that you said? You said you're convinced that just like ultraviolet light, they will discover something new?
We will find the ultra and the infra of the DNA, yes.
That is extraordinary.
And here we are possibly looking at it already.
Right. And that was just published, a week ago, I think, December 9th.
Are you kidding
me? Yeah, 1 week ago. I mean, jeez.
This was published, of course, looked into long before, but that was published almost to the day that this was beginning to roll around in my head. That's funny.
That's crazy. Yeah.
It's a coinky dink, you know. We don't, that's all I can say about it.
A very fun one, a very nice one. The thing that's changing, and I realized this. Not because I invented it, because I read somebody else's thoughts on it. I realized this back in the late 70s, and that is that the thing that has changed most over the last 50 years is the rate of change itself.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
So we're going to be finding these things out. We're going to be discovering these things more and more, faster and faster, and Lord only knows where that's going to end up.
Yeah, and I think that the reproduction of creation, reproducing creation, and extending creation, as my friend Leslie likes to call it.
What does he call it?
The extension of creation. Creation extends creation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like that.
It is good.
And it's really kind of obvious. It really is happening all around us all the time, so... It's just somebody has the nerve to say something that's off the grid. Folks, we're not trying to be off the grid. I wasn't trying to be different when I joined the Children of God. I wasn't trying to be different when I joined the Word of Faith movement. I was searching for myself. And you know what? I found myself. And the things I was searching for was already here. That I didn't have to sell everything that I had and give it to the poor and wear somebody else's underwear. I didn't have to confess the word. I didn't have to use money as seed. I didn't have to speak lies to say it's truth, to try to find truth. So I didn't have to walk the streets every day trying to win the lost in the Children of God movement. I didn't have to didn't have to pray in tongues every day. Didn't have to give 10%. I didn't have to, and I didn't have to, and I didn't have to, and I didn't have to produce what is already there. I found myself. You know where I found me?
Where?
I found me in Christ.
You didn't have to, because someone else had done it for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Found me and placed me securely in Him. I'm in Him as sure as they take a genetic strand from one person and put it into the genetic strand of a zygote or whatever stage that they begin this. Just as sure as that is now a part of that child, that's how sure I am a part of His righteousness. That's how sure I've got His righteousness. I needed righteousness. So what did God do? He changed the genetic descendants of Adam, and He took the righteousness of God. He took the holiness. He took all of the things that were demanded out of man. He GMO'd us. He genetically modified us in the spiritual chain of DNA, and you're just it now.
So God was in Christ, reconciling the world to Himself, the Bible says. And you're saying you were in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
That would make you God. Preposterous.
Yes, preposterous is right. You know, it's. I remember.
maybe that's why they call it amazing grace.
Yeah, amazing. And, you know, against nature even.
Oh.
You know, you want to open up another conversation?
dear me.
Do you know what a virgin birth is? It's against nature. You know what a resurrection from the dead is? It's against nature. I'm going to let you take that wherever you want to take it. But
if one died, all died. That's unnatural.
It's unnatural. It's folks, we're not looking for supernatural. We'll settle for unnatural any day of the week.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah, unnatural.
Because the most supernatural thing about supernatural is that it's against nature. I mean, if you're wanting to grow a new limb, isn't that against nature? Folks, just think of all the things that we do. I mean, the very house you live in is against nature. The fact that the water flows uphill into your pipes, goodness gracious, it's all against nature.
Come to think of it, everything we prize the most, materially speaking, is unnatural.
It is unnatural, the things that we prize the most. So, you know, we want so very much for this to be inspiring to you. The book of Ephesians, we've not left it out, but you see, the book of Ephesians is what inspired me along these lines. Statements such as, even when we were dead in sin, hath he quickened, DNA altered us genetically.
Now, spit it out, mate. Can you spit it out?
Hath quickened us together with Christ. For by grace are you saved through faith. You know, and grace is that which you've not had anything to do with. Folks, if you get genetically modified, you didn't have anything to do with that.
Well, that's what the verse is, and that not of yourselves, it's a gift of God.
Yes. So do you see, what I'm trying to say is that we see creation replicating itself. And yes, I know there's people that are very afraid of what genetic modification can lead to. But my aunts and uncles up in Morgan County were afraid of the telephone, folks.
Yeah, people might be afraid of it, but God beat you to it.
Yeah, he's been doing it for way longer than we've been involved in it, that's for sure. We're just looking at it.
I want to just read this verse, Ephesians 2. We are going to make a pretense of reading the Bible, okay, family? Just among whom, verse 3, among whom also we had our conversation in times past in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature.
Yeah.
We were by nature.
The children of wrath. Not wrathful children.
No. No, the children of wrath. So anything you are right now is not natural. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and you are not the children of wrath. We are the children of peace.
Oh my.
See, we are not the children of wrath. That DNA was removed from our spiritual genome, and we are no longer that. Now, just because you genetically was genetically modified to have musical talent, you know, unless you practice music, you're not just going to wake up one day playing the piano. I don't care how genetically disposed you are to that talent.
I did. I was a wonder child, you know, the wunderkind.
Just a prodigy.
Amazing, mate. Amazing. That's me.
And I agree.
Basketball star that I am.
So, folks, something wonderful has happened to the human race. And I wanted to expand this. Don has helped me verbalize it. I took him through a conversation that And I also had a conversation with Dr. Leslie, who I know as a scientist himself in the realm of medicine.
Yeah, but he's had to work at everything. I'm just natural wonder, a wunderkind.
I knew he would shoot it down totally if this just was just stupid.
And for those of you who don't know who Leslie is, Leslie Kazar is our a dear friend up in Canada who is a cardiologist, I think, isn't it, mate?
Yes, he's one of the top cardiologists in Canada.
Well, I mean, he's top of the world, really. I mean, Canada's way up there north of us. He must be.
Yes, by definition of location. Folks, something happened. And all we're doing, we're kind of like the folks that finally saw ultraviolet. We're like the folks who finally saw infrared. And realized what infrared could do, what ultraviolet could do.
Yeah.
You know, and the power of the color spectrum, the power is in the ultraviolet and the infrared. They are the ones that are used in the realm of physics, unlike the entire color spectrum.
And just like Calvary, it was invisible to most people for the longest time.
Deliberately hidden, even.
Yeah, and Paul says, what does Paul say? He calls it a mystery. He says, and now this mystery has been revealed. Wow.
It's been revealed, and so much of Christianity is still looking for the mystery.
Oh.
And you see, when I joined the church, Children of God, I really knew that there was something more, and I stayed with it until I exhausted myself with that portion of works-based behavior modification belief systems. I went out of that within a year headlong into the Word of Faith movement, a works-based behavior modification, different modifications. I took a lot of my Children of God. Goodness, we started the witnessing program in the Norval Hayes Ministries with all of this. But it all came up wanting, because we were struggling to be, what we already were.
That's that reminds me of the finger writing on the wall. Was it Nebuchadnezzar in the Old Testament? You have been weighed and found wanting.
Yes, absolutely.
And that really was the description of my Christian life. Christianity had been weighed and found wanting. I wonder if we can read through again, we can read through the early part of chapter 2 of Ephesians, and I'm going to read it again in the mirror version. And it reads, "Picture where God found us. We were in a death trap of an inferior lifestyle, constantly living below the blueprint measure of our lives. We were all part of a common pattern swept along under a powerful invisible influence, a spirit energy that adopted us as sons to its dictate through unbelief. Throughout that time, every one of us were warped and corrupted in our conduct, snared in a jumble of forbidden lusts, driven by the desires of the senses, totally engaged in an expression of a life ruled by mind games. It was as if a twisted passion parented a universal breed of people."
Wow, a universal breed of people. Bad DNA.
Bad DNA, yep. None of this could distract from the extravagant love of God. He continued to love us with the exact same. My eyes aren't as good as they used to be. I nearly read with the exact same insanity. But actually, the word Dutoit uses here is that he continued to love us with the exact same intensity. This is how grace rescued us. Sin left us dead towards God, like spiritual corpses, yet in that state of deadness and indifference, God co-quickened us together with Christ. Sin proved how dead we were, and the law confirmed it. Grace reveals how alive we are now. The gospel announces it. Before anyone but God believed it, he made us alive together with him and raised us up together with him. Remember that Paul elsewhere talks about before the foundations of the world.
Yeah.
We are co-included in his resurrection. We are also elevated in his ascension to be equally present in the throne room of the heavenly realm where we were co-seated with him in his executive authority. I think I've just got to read that verse again. We are co-included in his resurrection. We are also elevated in his ascension to be equally present in the throne room of the heavenly realm where we are co-seated with him in his executive authority. We are fully represented in Christ Jesus. Imagine how God is now able for timeless perpetuity to exhibit the trophy of the wealth of his grace demonstrated in his kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. Grace exhibits excessive evidence of the success of the DNA transplant of the cross.
Yeah.
Your salvation is not a reward for good behavior. It was a grace thing from start to finish. You had no hand in it. Even the gift to believe simply reflects his faith. If this could be accomplished through any action of yours, then there would be grounds for boasting.
Yeah.
We are engineered by his design. He molded and manufactured us in Christ. We are his workmanship, his poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And he destroyed sin through that engineering, and it is gone. You know, two things that Christians suffer from, and I might add every religion around the world.
Oh, well, the first one is obvious. You know, with all their potluck dinners, it's obesity.
The thing that they all
suffer from. Oh, you're going to ignore me. Oh, okay.
I'm trying. The thing that has been taken away that people don't know is guilt and shame. Now, how did guilt get taken away? The law was removed. How did shame get taken away? Who we are was changed.
Oh, wow.
Because guilt is based on what you do. Shame is based on who you are.
That is a wrap. Oh, that is a good wrap. That is... And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you would like to know anything about... Oh, hang on. The pledge drive. Were we going to say anything more about the pledge drive?
I think what we said at the beginning is probably plenty enough. Expect a phone call.
And give.
We appreciate your help.
And give until it hurts. If it doesn't hurt, you're not really giving. You know that, don't you? And if you would like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit any link you like. The connect link, there's a donate link in there, you know, you could hit that. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in the heart of the gospel.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in the secret city in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, in the bonus room above my sister's garage. We love you guys. We'll be talking to you soon. And we're looking forward to a really wonderful Christmas time for everybody. It's even though it has nothing to do with, honestly, Christmas has nothing to do with Jesus or the scriptures or anything else. It's an enjoyable holiday. We give him credit. We talk about him during that time. but it has nothing to do with the seasons or times in which he was born. The activities have nothing to do with it at all, but some of the songs are so chocked full of the gospel. Enjoy your visit to Walmart.
Yeah, it took me a minute to get. If you want one of the best gospel songs ever written, try O Come All Ye Faithful. Just read the words of it. It is extraordinary. We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we're going to be here to do the same thing all over again next week.
Better.
Inside of you is a real believer. Inside of you is the author and finisher. Inside of you and inside of me. And inside of us is Jesus. Inside of you is a joy unspeakable. Inside of you is a peace so beautiful. Inside of you and inside of me. And inside of us is Jesus. Inside of you is the tower of strength. Inside of you is the greatest friend. Inside of you is the fountain.
Gospel revelation.